Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I am here with Jonathan McKee, and he is the author of more than 20 books. And here's some of the titles. You'll like these. If I Had a Parenting Do-Over. I mean, who doesn't want to do some things over? 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone-Obsessed Kid. The Zombie Apocalypse Survival Guide for Teenagers. And The Guy's Guide to God, Girls, and the Phone in Your Pocket. Jonathan speaks to parents, leaders, and young people worldwide while writing about parenting and youth culture and providing free resources for families. So be sure and check out his website, The Source for Parents. And the word four is just the number four. That's thesourceforparents.com. Welcome, welcome to our show, Jonathan. And today we're going to talk about one of your recent books, The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices. Welcome.
Oh, man, thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, in fact, you say you have 21 tips to wise posting in an insecure world. That's like your subtitle. And we're going to go through some of those tips. But just, you know, just set the stage for us how you came to be so involved with, you know, helping parents and young people on this journey of life.
I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. This will be fun. I've been in youth ministry a little over 20 years and working with young people. I've been working with young people before they had cell phones in their pockets and before those cell phones turned into smartphones. So it's been quite a journey. But in working with young people, one of the things that we just did is we as a youth worker always wanted to come alongside the parent. And that was such an important, essential thing. And then my wife and I, we raised three kids of our own who are now 20, 22, and 24. And so at the same time, I'm out on the front lines kind of doing youth ministry, reading about, you know, culture and how we can, you know, when it comes to different research and stuff about raising kids right. Well, you know, research is all, you know, fine and dandy until you try to do it yourself, and all of a sudden you realize you know nothing. So raising kids of our own, we started just kind of giving some humble workshops on, okay, I don't know if we really know how to do it, but here's how not to do it. So a lot of candid confessions of an imperfect parent was the title of one of my first workshops, and then books like If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, where I ended up asking other parents like myself, I pulled over 100 parents and asked them one question, actually. I asked them, if you can go back in time and if you could do one thing differently in your parenting, if you had a do-over, what would you do differently? And man, the answers were eye-opening. So it's been fun on this journey just talking with parents. And so I do a lot of parent workshops, writing about this stuff, sharing from my own experiences. And I just do a lot of research out there as to things that are working and things that are going on in the world of youth culture. So often someone will call me up if they have questions about what kids are watching, what they're listening to, what they're doing on their phones. And so it's natural to write this book to teenagers about wise posting in an insecure world.
Now you have my curiosity aroused here. So what was the majority of the do-overs that these parents wanted to do? Or do I have to get the book?
No, great question. And you can jump on Amazon. I won't stop you and get the book. But yeah, when I asked them that question, overwhelmingly, the number one answer came in many forms, but it sounded something like, I wish I would have spent more time with my kids.
Mm.
And it's funny because when it comes to parenting, you know, there's bonding and there's boundaries. Bonding is, of course, hanging out with your kids and rolling on the floor with your kids and you know, going and getting French fries with your kids. Where boundaries is more like, no, you're not going to have your smartphone in your room at night, or I need you home at this time. And both are important, bonding and boundaries. But the interesting thing was, for my particular survey, asking hundreds of parents this question, less than 2% of the answers were regret in the area of boundaries. Like, I wish I would have been more strict with my kid. The overwhelming majority, the answer was, I wish I would have hung out with my kid more. I wish I would have more family dinners, less screen time and more time, you know, talking. I wish instead of sitting on the beach and watching my kids play in the ocean, I wish I would have played with them. And it was interesting to hear that out of parents, this kind of regret for bonding time, wishing they would have spent more bonding time. So, yeah, fascinating stuff and something that was fun to unveil in that book, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over.
Yeah, you begin this book, The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices. You begin it with a note to mom and dad. Why did you think that was necessary?
Well, because I know who buys the book. Most teenagers aren't like, sign me up for a book about how to be wise, you know? So mom and dad, grandma, that caring adult, that caring youth worker is usually the one who buys this book, you know, and puts it in the kid's stocking or hands it to him and says, here you go, here's how to be wise in this world. And the kid rolls their eyes and goes, great. And so my goal was to, one, as I address that parent, that grandparent, to just spend a little time, so this chapter, that, you know, a note to the person who bought this book, that answers some of the questions they've got about, you know, should I let my kid have the phone in their bedroom, you know, and some of those big questions I have. What age should I let my kids at social media? Those are some of the big questions I hear from parents all the time at the workshop. So I told them that, and then when I told them, I said, hey, use this book as a tool. You could just hand it to your kid. But instead of that, what if you said, hey, you know, let's talk about the app Snapchat, read that chapter, and let's go to breakfast and let's talk about it. So I put discussion questions at the end of each chapter so that a mom or a dad or a grandparent could go through the book with their kid and dialogue. And I wanted to open up those doors of dialogue between parents and kids.
Yeah, and you even say walk with them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it is a journey. This, I'm not banging you over the head with something. I want you to, I mean, everything I know about my smartphone, to be honest with you, I learned from my grandkids. From turning it on to, you know, downloading apps and everything, because when it was first handed to me, well, I didn't even know how to get it to go. It just, you know, I'd had a little flip phone, but a smartphone was a whole nother language to learn.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of those nice opportunities that you took advantage of. It's fun to make the kid the expert and say, hey, you know, tell me about this app here. Show me this, you know. And when you do that, sometimes that opens up a kid that, you know, parents and grandparents always tell me, I can't get my kid's attention. They're always staring at their screen. Well, we can look for opportunities like that where when you ask them something, especially in an area of their interest, and you make them the expert, you know, if they're playing with a game and, you know, what is that? It's Minecraft. Really? Well, what's Minecraft? Show me. You know, that, and that's fun. It also gives them an opportunity to go, okay, let me show you. And they can get a little more excited about that than just put your stupid phone away and get over here and, you know, help me, whatever, clean the garage. And, you know, and I'm not saying don't make your kids clean the garage, but sometimes we need to enter their world. And when I entered my own kid's world, when I would play video games with him or whatever, he would start asking questions about my world. And so that opened up those doors of dialogue. That's important.
Yeah, I think grandparents have a great opportunity because hopefully they've grown wiser through the years. I know in a recent experience, I was with three grandsons, and we were riding back from the airport, and they all had their devices. You know, they were ready for the trip. And I just said, you want to play She Comes, She Comes? And all the devices were instantly put away because, you know, She Comes, She Comes. I mean, of course, that's a very old game. You just say a letter that something is either on the road that you see or inside your car. But it was almost like they were eager to put away their electronic devices to play this crazy game with grandma. And their ages, the oldest is in the 7th grade and the youngest is in 1st grade. So age span. It's not, you know, it's not like the older one wasn't interested too. I think there's something in us that we really want to be social.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about tip number one, love the one you're with.
Yeah, no, I started right there because that's one of the things that I think young people are actually feeling. When I talk with young people at school assemblies, and if I talk about that, you know, I say, hey, I see you guys, you know, you're looking at your devices, you're in a circle, and everybody's staring at it, and, you know, and sometimes you guys are even trying to talk to each other, and you're not listening, and you'll even see kids sometimes pointing at each other and going, that's so you, that's you, you know, because, of course, it's not them, it's their friend who does that, but it's kind of a felt need around right now, and you're seeing a lot of, hype about that, even in newspaper articles and in the media. You'll hear of people taking media fasts and taking a break from social media, because some people are getting tired of it. And on one hand, they love it. They can't get enough of it. But it's frustrating for them when they're noticing some of the effects of it. And sadly, right now, we live in a world where in the last 5 years, since social media is so prevalent, mobile devices have been in everybody's pocket, in the last 5 years, we've seen an unprecedented rise in teen anxiety, in depression, a 40-year high in teen suicide. I mean, it's mm-hmm. off the charts. A lot of young people are realizing, hey, something's wrong, you know, with this. And so, as a matter of fact, there was a survey that Common Sense Media did where they asked parents and they asked teenagers, how many of you think that all this technology is just too much? And 66% of parents said, oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, this is way too much for teenagers. Believe it or not, just over 50% of teenagers actually said, yeah, it's too much. So on one hand, they can't live without this device. They love it. But on the other hand, they know something's wrong. This is so brand new. I mean, we're all just figuring this mm-hmm. out. And so they kind of cherish the idea of, hey, I'd like to have good relationships with my friends. And so that's what I did in that chapter, is I just presented, hey, here's some of the data coming out about how devices sometimes are interfering with the relationships with those who are most important to us. So I didn't say, get rid of your device. I didn't say devices are bad. I just said, hey, this device is great for connecting with people outside the room when it doesn't interfere with our relationship with the people inside the room.
So if I was to tell you that Steve Jobs' goal when he was working on the iPhone, the very beginnings, was to make it as lovely and as appealing as his trips on with LSD, would that have any bearing on the addictive aspects of social media and the internet?
Yeah, well, and that's interesting because you got a smart guy there, and I won't go into his intentions, but let's talk about what we do know. We know that in January 2007, he stood up on a stage and he basically introduced a device to the world that he said would change the world. And his words proved to be rather prophetic, because when he made the announcement in 2007, he introduced a device called a smartphone. It was an iPhone. And there were some smartphones out at that time, but most of them weren't very smart, and not a lot of people had them. Well, when he announced the iPhone, which was combining, you know, all these fun games that people were already playing on their iPods and that kind of stuff, combining that with a phone, and combining that with social media, three things that people loved: entertainment, their phone, and social media, all in one thing, it took off. And within 5 years, by 2012, America crossed the 50% mark for having those devices, smartphones, in their pockets. And now, as you and I talk right now, over 80% of 12 through 17-year-olds have those in their pockets. So, yeah, people love them. They can't get enough of them. And the average 12 through 17-year-old spends over 9 hours a day soaking in entertainment media when you add it all up, all the screen time, the music, everything. So, yeah, that's a full-time job. That's a lot of stuff, and people are enjoying it, and a lot of people are having trouble putting it down, and that's where this tool, this book, is a good conversation piece, to talk about and say, hey, it's not that this phone is bad. I mean, this phone's got some great features. It's got a Bible app. It's got a GPS. Mm-hmm. It can play some fun music. But how do we not let this device control us? How do we let it be a good tool to help us connect with others?
We were talking about tip number one in your book, love the one you're with, and how digital world has changed the way we interact with one another, and that longing to be eye to eye, face to face, heart to heart with one another, and that somehow gets lost when it goes through a digital device, but yet it's so intoxicating and so fun and so handy. I know for me, I almost feel like my brain wouldn't operate if I didn't have this little handheld computer with me all the time. So I'm not going to tell you what tip number two is. You can look it up yourself. But I want to talk about tip number three. Nothing you post is temporary.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's one of the things that I tell you young people really need to think about. I mean, when it comes to these conversations we need to have with our kids, I actually have a parent workshop called Four Conversations. And I have parents and young people in the same room. And we call it the who, what, where, and when of social media and mobile devices, because it's like, who are you talking to? What are you posting? The when is kind of like, when are you gleaning this stuff? Because it's like, you know, are you, you know, late at night, you got your phone in your room and stuff, because there's so much, you know, example stuff. And the where is your location you're posting, because a lot of people are posting vulnerable information like their location, and they don't realize that. And here's the ramifications that put it in a realistic situation. Let's say somebody's 17-year-old daughter is out at Starbucks late at night having some coffee, and she's studying for her history exam the next day. And as she's finishing up and getting ready to call it quits, she does what so many young people do. She takes a picture of her cup that she's been doodling on, and she posts, you know, hey, all my, you know, study session, you know, about ready to call it quits and head home. And she posts it right there. All of a sudden, there's some ramifications to what she just did, some ramifications that maybe she hasn't even thought about. One is who can see that post. So that brings up, you know, one thing I talk about in another chapter in the book there, which is who can see that, which is, you know, who are you friending? You know, depending on what app it was, if she was on Instagram, you know, does she have people actually request, you know, to follow her, or can anybody follow her? And that's an important setting, because she might have met somebody that she thought, oh, sure, I'll let this guy follow me. And she thinks it's some, you know, 18-year-old from the school across town. And what she doesn't realize is it's some 43-year-old pedophile who's watching her from, you know, his computer in his basement. So who is following you is very important. The other thing that's important about what she just posted is that she posted that. If she, for example, posted the location of that particular Starbucks, now that guy knows exactly where she is and where she's about ready to walk to her car. So that's one of those where things that's really scary. So that's kind of the safety thing. But it's interesting. On schools, that's not the issues they're dealing with on a Monday morning. The issues that a principal is dealing with on a Monday morning is more of the content of what young people are posting, because they're posting, you know, vulnerable pics about themselves, or posting, you know, bad rants about somebody else, cyberbullying, all this kind of stuff. So what, you know, and sadly what often happens is, you know, a boyfriend will ask his girlfriend to send a nude. That's what they call it, send nudes. And the girlfriend might eventually give in and send one of those nude pictures or racy pictures. And eventually boyfriend and girlfriend break up, and the boyfriend sends that picture that the girl sent to all his friends and says, look at this, you know, and he has all a variety of names that he calls her and sends that picture out. And all of a sudden on a Monday morning, the principal's dealing with every kid's walking around looking at the picture of this girl at the school, and the girl's devastated. And very often the girl ends up having to switch schools, maybe even switch districts, whatever, because, you know, the teasing, the mocking becomes so great. And this kind of stuff happens all the time. So this chapter is really talking with young people about being careful what you post. Because sometimes young people even think, oh, it's on Snapchat, the pictures disappear. But the FTC chimed in and actually gave Snapchat a hand slap and said, hey, you're misleading your customers, because nothing you post online is temporary. And that's really the theme of the chapter. Nothing you post is temporary, because kids think, oh, this disappears, and they don't even realize kids are taking screenshots and whatever methods to retrieve these photos, pass them around, and we got to be careful what we post.
That kind of ties in with your tip number six, unmask.
Yeah, there's that crazy word, huh? Anonymous, anonymity. Yeah, exactly. The mask, you know, unmask, the myth of anonymity. It's this thing where sometimes, again, just like, you know, people think, hey, just like when I post something and all my problems will disappear, just like that post. No, we learned that, no, nothing you post is temporary. In the same way, a lot of young people think, oh, well, I'll go on to one of these anonymous sites where I can say whatever I want without there being any ramifications. And so in that chapter, I just share story after story, true story of kids saying mean things, or kids saying things that were actually illegal or whatever, and the cops showing up at their door two hours later. And the kids are then saying, wait, I thought this was anonymous. And they're realizing, again, nothing you post is temporary and nothing is anonymous. And so it's just getting us to think before we post. And that's where my advice probably differs a little bit from the world's advice, because the world will, you know, you'll read an article sometimes in a Wall Street Journal or in New York Times or something, and it'll say something like, hey, we need to teach young people to be careful what they take pictures of. And my advice is actually stolen from the Bible. I say, no, forget be careful what you take pictures of. How about be careful how you live?
Yes.
And let's be careful. And so I share a little scripture there, as I do in every chapter, about how our lives need to represent the one we represent from above, and what that looks like, because you never know when someone's clicking a picture of you. And maybe we should live our lives as if we're being filmed at any moment.
Well, as we come to the conclusion of the show, what could you share with my listeners, both the young people and those parents and grandparents that adore them, that give them hope in this very digitally embedded world?
Well, my advice would be to open up those doors of communication and talk about this, because I think both young people and older people are all spending a ton of screen time. As a matter of fact, for your young listeners, let me tell them, do you know that mom and dad, actually, their age group averages more time in front of screens than you do? So if they're giving you a hard time about your screen time, say, well, sorry, it's your age group that averages more. Okay, no, don't talk to them disrespectfully. But and you know who actually watches more TV than mom and dad? Grandma and grandpa. So, I mean, it's America, we love our screen time, and we love looking at phones, we love looking at devices, we love listening to music. And I'd say open up those doors of dialogue and talk about this, because I think some of the frustrations that we're feeling and some of the consequences we're experiencing are happening across the board. And if we can dialogue about and be honest about what we're streaming, what we're reading, what we're posting, these are good conversations to start. And this book is simply a tool that helps open up that dialogue, so you can talk about some of the stuff that maybe we haven't thought about how easy is this, but is this right? Is this good for me? And a phone can be a very fun tool. But we don't want to turn into a tool misusing this thing. So that's the conversations I'm having.
Fantastic. Well, we've been just barely touching the surface of the book called The Teen's Guide to Social Media and Mobile Devices, 21 Tips to Wise Posting in an Insecure World. And I'm telling you, teens, you're naturally insecure at this age, and you try to, you know, cover it up with a lot of bravado. This is a great book. This is it's not judgmental. It doesn't give you a specific recipe. It wants you to think, how do I want to conduct my life, and how do I want to spend the resources that God has given me? He happens to have given all of us the same amount of time. Maybe not money, maybe not other things, but money. He has given us the same amount. Jonathan, thank you so much for writing the book and for your passion for parenting in general, because a lot of the things that you do really, really will help parents. Again, go to his website, thesourceforparents.com. Thank you again. I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.